It is my distinct pleasure to introduce Rabbi Kenneth Brander, the Dean of the Center for the Jewish Future, former rabbi of the Boca Raton Synagogue, whose contributions to the rabbinate and to education are legendary, and whose vision in particular for this conference, realizing the importance of these kinds of issues and facilitating in extraordinary ways the success of this conference and all the efforts of the Bioethics Committee, Rabbi Brander will now begin our session and introduce our session on cardiac death in Jewish law. And as you can see, Mirtz Hashem will be able to hear Rav Schechter in just a moment. Rabbi Kenneth Brander.
I want to just begin, before we hear Rav Schechter, to thank a few people who really made this happen. I want to thank two individuals who spent literally their whole summer really focused on this initiative. That is two students, Yona Bardos and Zahava Shaninsky. I know that they're not going to thank themselves, but the truth is that without them, all of what we will benefit from today would not have happened. I want to also thank Mrs. Raskis for making the time to come in and to share words with us. It was greatly appreciated. And to thank all of those from the Center for the Jewish Future, in particular, Alan Brava, Ruthie Israeli, and Jordana Shore, for really working on this for an extended period of time to really help put together a conference of this nature. And in particular, to all the distinguished Rashi Yeshiva, Rabbanim Chashuvim, distinguished doctors, mental health professionals, who came together for this event. It's really a first-class event with really premier educators and intellectuals, and we will all benefit from hearing their Torah. I'd also like to thank the Simon Wiesenthal Museum of Tolerance for allowing us the opportunity to be able to hear Rav Schechter. Without them, this would not have been possible. Rav Schechter is booked months in advance, and even though we thought we'd give him enough warning, he already was scheduled in Los Angeles, but with the help of video conference technology in the Museum of Tolerance, Rav Schechter can see us, we can see him, and at the end, if there's time, he'll take questions. Rav Schechter really needs no introduction. If he did, he wouldn't be speaking here today, and he wouldn't be wanted all over the world. But I must say, on a personal level, the relationship between a posek, a rav, and a community is truly what allows a community to grow. And over the past 15 years, I've had the privilege of interacting with many of the Rashi Yeshiva of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan and benefiting from their wisdom and their caring. But one Rashi Yeshiva sticks out in the crowd who's always been there for me on a personal level and on a communal level. And whatever things were accomplished in Boca Raton, in many, many ways, it's really due to the energies and the effort and the support of Rav Herschel Schechter. It's critical that we have the opportunity to hear our poskim. It's critical that we have the opportunity for them to share a vision with us. And throughout the day, that idea is being celebrated. Without any further ado, it is my privilege and pleasure to ask Mori Verebi, Rav Herschel Schechter, to share words of Torah with us. Rebbe.
Thank you very much. Maybe you can turn off the sound. The Gemara in the last Perek in Yuma discusses a situation where we're not sure whether an individual is alive or dead. And the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Parshas Noach, which reads, Kol hasha nishmas ruach chayim biyapov, mesu becharovu. The pasuk seems like it's telling us that the definition of life is when people are breathing. When they're not breathing, the person is considered dead. So the Gemara says, based on that comment on the pasuk, that if you have Mishanof Laal of Mapolis, a person is in a location, he was unfortunate enough that a whole building collapsed on top of him, and we see that the person is no longer breathing, we assume that the person is dead, and we're not permitted to be Mechal Shabbos to save his life, because there's nothing to say, the person is considered dead. So based on that Gemara, many have developed a theory of brain death, that since the stem of the brain, which controls the breathing, is no longer functioning, the person is not breathing, so the person is considered dead. There is a tshuva in the Chasam Sofer, which is one of the more popular tshuvas, because it's quoted by the Pesachic Tshuva in the end of Yerideya, where the Chasam Sofer responds to a shaila that was sent to him by the Maritz Chayes, or Tzvi Hirschayes. It's interesting, this is one of the few tshuvas in the Chasam Sofer where the name of the shoyel does not appear. Usually in the Ruba Deruba of the tshuvas, the 99.9% of the tshuvas, it says to whom the Chasam Sofer is responding. And this tshuva says, L'chorod harav pleinim in Medina pleinis. It doesn't say to whom the tshuva was sent. But we know that this was sent to the Maritz Chayes because he was very proud of his correspondence with the Chasam Sofer. And he published a separate sefer, which is exactly this topic. My personal correspondence with the Chasam Sofer, where he includes his shailas, and the response is given by the Chasam Sofer. So this, the reason why the name of the Maritz Chayes doesn't appear on the tshuva is because in the middle of the tshuva, the Chasam Sofer writes to him, are you an apikoris or something, that you don't have a munas chachamim? So he didn't want to, when they published the tshuva of the Chasam Sofer, he didn't want the readers to know whom he was accusing of such a significant accusation. So he left out the name. But the Maritz Chayes writes that he was the one who sent the shayla. So when you read the tshuva in the Chasam Sofer, he's responding paragraph to paragraph to the shaylas that were sent to him by the Maritz Chayes. So in one paragraph, the Maritz Chayes quotes a statement from the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, where the Rambam writes that in medical records of the Greek doctors, they recorded that a person stopped breathing for 3 days and remained alive and came to after the 3 days. So we see, apparently, that just because a person is not breathing for 3 days doesn't necessarily mean that he's dead. And the issue is that we know that Chevre Kadisha always starts doing their work after a person stops breathing for 15, 20 minutes. We assume that the individual is dead, and we start preparing him for the kvura. So how does this correspond to this medical record that the Greeks record, that there was a case where a person stopped breathing for 3 days? So the Chasam Sofer says, in response to this statement from the Mor Nevuchim, he says, yes, he accepts this possibility. And he says he thinks that the comment that the rabbis made in the end of Yuma on the Pasuk Kol Asher Nishmas Ruach Chaim Biapov, that when a person stops breathing, he's dead, and when he's alive, while he's breathing, he's alive. The rabbis in the Talmud only use this Pasuk as an asmachta. He doesn't think that this is a drasha gemura. He does not think that this is the definition of life and death, that when the individual is breathing, he's alive. When the person or the animal is not breathing, the animal or person is dead. He thinks that this is 99.99% of the case. This is a similar dover. If he's not breathing, this is a simon that he is already dead. But this is not the definition of life and death. So what is the definition? And then the Chasam Sofer explains that although the Gemara tells us in the end of Yuma and in the end of the first Perek in Ksubas, v'hocho b'pikuch nefoshes achar harois, whenever there's a suffix sakona, even if it's way less than 50-50, even if there's only 1% chance that there is, or let's say a person is sick on Shabbos. So there's a 1% chance that he's a chayla mesuka. The odds are 99-1 that we don't have to drive him to the hospital. Or he's so sick, he's probably going to die even if we do chilul Shabbos, even if we do drive him to the hospital. The odds are 99-1 that we will not be able to keep him alive. But nonetheless, if there's a 1% chance of saving his life, so we don't follow Rav when it comes to Suffolk Sakana. Any slight Suffolk Sakana, you have to be Mechal Shabbos and so on. So nonetheless, the Chasam Sofer says, but what if it's a Suffolk Echad Mini Aleph Alfi Alofim? If it's a very far-fetched Suffolk Sakana, that's utterly ridiculous. It's such a far-fetched Suffolk Sakana that people never consider that as a Suffolk. So then the Chasam Sofer says that that's not considered a Suffolk Pikuachna. So he says, when the Chevre Kadisha sees that a person has not been breathing for 15, 20 minutes, we assume that this is a similar dover that he is already dead, even though there is one chance in 25,000 that he's still alive. That's such a far-fetched suffix sakana, we have the right to ignore that. He says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was given a din And the Lord says not to be male in his ames until after Alois HaShachar, he must have been given this guideline that when, how do you determine whether the person is alive or dead? So he must have been given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu this guideline. If he's not breathing for 15, 20 minutes, that'd be Odua that he's dead. But it's not that breathing is the definition of life and death. It must be something else. Because the Rambam said that it's possible that a person is not breathing for 3 days and he's still alive. So what is to determine whether a person is alive or dead? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very fascinating tshuva in Hilchas Tfilin, in the first Chelek Igros Moshe, or Rechaim, where he was asked the question, can one fulfill a mitzvah tfilin if the left arm is paralyzed? So you consider that a kiyum mitzvah to put tfilin on a paralyzed arm. So Rav Moshe says, absolutely yes. How does he know that yes? So he writes that his father suffered a stroke. Rav Moshe Feinstein's father suffered a stroke several months before he died, and his left side was paralyzed, and his father continued to put on tefillin on the left arm, so that's clearly an indication that that's the din. Okay, why should the din be so? So Rav Moshe goes through sources in the Gemara and Bechiris, where the Gemara in the middle of Masechet Bechiris, the Gemara discusses for 2.5 prokim the dinim of mumim, what constitutes a balmum by behemoth, that is posel hakrov al gabi hamizbeah, what constitutes a balmum by adam, whose akoyin balmum is posel through hakrovas hakorbanas, and what's considered b'chusei reivos. So Rav Moshe quotes from the Gemara that if there's no flow of blood, if the flow of blood has stopped in an irreversible fashion to a specific organ, and that organ is going to develop gangrene, it's going to die, so that's considered a dead organ. So Moshe says if you would have the left arm there would be no blood flowing in the left arm, that would be considered a dead arm, and you wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of hanachas tefillin by putting tefillin on that left arm. But if the left arm is just paralyzed, it means that the nervous system is not functioning, but the blood is still flowing, so that's considered a live arm, the organ, the left arm is alive, and one can fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin with such an arm. So Rav Moshe assumes that the definition of life and death in an organ is based on the flow of blood, and he quotes as the mocker for this concept, this sugya, this gemara in Masechet Chorot. The Pashto says that this is the popular din, Rav Moshe does not quote this, but the Pashto says that this is the popular din that we have from Masechet Shabbos, that if one is choyvel be'odom or be'beim, if one causes bleeding on Shabbos, this constitutes a malacha. Chavala constitutes a malacha deraisa. What exactly is the malacha? So those who learn in yeshivas know that there are three different opinions. Rashi has one opinion, the Rambam has a different opinion, and the Tosfos opinion is the accepted view, because the Yerushalmi says explicitly, like Tosfos says, Tosfos explains that the pasuk says in Chumash ki hadam hu ha'nefesh, that the blood circulation is what keeps animals and human beings alive. So if one causes choyvel chavola b'Shabbos, one causes bleeding on Shabbos, so we declare malikot l'kula malikot l'palga. If one would kill the whole organism, this would constitute the malach of Netilas Neshama, Shoichet, Netilas Neshama, is one of the lametes of its malachas on Shabbos. So Tosfos uses the expression malikot l'kula malikot l'palga. If one causes a little bit of bleeding on Shabbos, that's also a malach of Chavola, and that's what it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi. This expression, malikot l'kula, malikot l'palga, in connection with this topic, that if one causes bleeding, it's also considered like kot l'kula or kot l'palga. This exact concept appears in Masechet Nida, not in connection with Chil Shabbos, and in a different context there. So the Pashto says that that's what Rav Moshe's Gemara and Choros is based on, when there's the flow of blood has terminated in an irreversible fashion to any specific organ, so that organ is considered dead. When the blood circulatory system has terminated on the whole organism, then the whole organism is considered dead. So the question is, Naniach, let's assume that a brain-dead patient doesn't have enough blood flowing to the brain to keep the brain alive. So we can declare that the brain is considered dead. Does that necessarily imply that the whole organism is considered dead? So there are several possibilities here. There are Mishnayos in Mura and in Nazir and in other Masechtos, when the Mishnah speak of a concept of Eva Shehaneshama Tluya Bo. We know in common sense and in Halacha that there's a difference between a vital organ and a non-vital organ. People, Rachmana Litzlan, are in wars, they're in accidents, and they lose fingers, they lose limbs, they lose ears, they lose nose, they lose eyes, but they're still alive. If one loses a vital organ, so he's on his way to die. So how many vital organs are there? So the Mishnah, according to the Rambam's Girsois in the Mishnayos and several Mishnayos, the Rambam has the Mishnayos only speaking of three vital organs: the brain, the liver, and the heart. With respect to various dinim, Pashtu Kedusha Bekula, with respect to Harei Kvedi Nazir, Harei Ragli Nazir, Izeno Nazir, Harei Kvedi Nazir, Harei Libi Nazir, Harei Roshi Nazir, is considered as if he said Hareini Nazir. So the Rambam has all the Mishnah is only speaking about three vital organs. Doesn't mean that Lab Dafke, the Halacha, would say the same regarding all the other, more than three vital organs. Does Halacha say we only recognize these three vital organs, or these three were only picked as a mashal, and the din would apply to all the other vital organs also? It's not clear what Allah has to say. Is that the rabbis, the Tanakh, have a tradition that dafke, these three vital organs count and the others are ignored or not? Is unclear. But with respect to determining what is considered death, what is considered netilas neshama, when is it called yitzias neshama, death? So it should have something to do with these evesha neshama tluya bo. When all of the vital organs are dead, means when there's no longer blood circulating to all of the vital organs, so for sure the person is dead. The vital organs are dead, so the organism is dead. What if only one vital organ is dead, like the brain, or the liver, or the heart, or the lungs, the face? So I could see several possibilities here. I can see one possibility that if you would have asked me without any sources in the Gemara, I would have said, if any one vital organ is dead, that means that the whole person is dead. So I can see lav dafke, that the brain, if a patient is brain dead, is he considered dead? I can imagine that the din should be the same if one's liver is dead, or the kidney is dead. If a vital organ is not functioning, any one vital organ is not functioning, so the whole organism is considered dead. I can see another possibility where one can argue the point and say, no, that you have to have all of the vital organs dead in order, if any one vital organ is still alive, so the organism is not yet considered dead until all the vital organs are dead. Or I can see a third possibility that we should say Ruba Kukula, that if the majority of the vital organs are dead, then the organism is considered dead. And then again, I can see the two possibilities, whether there is some kind of Bahalach al-Moshe Misina that we only consider the three vital organs that the Rambam had, the Giris and the Mishnais, those are the only three that the Talmud ever speaks of, Dafke, the Rosh and the Kovet and the Lev, or Lav Dafke. So there's several logical possibilities over here. If one word was that if any one vital organ is dead, means that there's no longer any blood circulating to any one vital organ, the whole organism is dead, then we would have difficulty in defining what exactly is a goseis. The halacha has special dinim with respect to a goseis. There are rare halachas where we declare that a goseis is considered kimeis. Most of the time, with respect to most of the halachas, we declare goseis is kachai l'chol dvarov. He's not yet netame at sheteitze nishmasai. But there are some halachas where we declare that a goseis is considered kimeis. So how does one define goseis? So the Rambam writes in his commentary on Mishnayos Aholos that a goseis is one in whom the process of death has already begun. He writes of tahalich in the Hebrew translation from the Arabic. He speaks of a tahalich hamoves, that death is a process. If one should assume that if any one vital organ is dead, then the whole organism is considered dead, the whole person or the animal is considered dead, then we would have difficulty defining what exactly is a goseis. At what point is the person considered a goseis? You mean when the blood circulation to any one vital organ is starting to stop flowing? So it's very unclear. So that's where Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, were both asked this shaila by doctors years ago, what's the definition of goseis? So they write, we don't have a good definition. They don't know how to define goseis. If one were to assume that one is not considered dead, an animal or a person is not considered dead until rove or all of the vital organs no longer have the blood circulating, So then we can have a very clean definition of gosis. Gosis means the beginning of the death process has set in, means if there's one vital organ, no longer has blood circulating to it. So that would be the definition of gosis. And when is the process over? When is the person considered dead? When the process of death is completed, that's when all of the all of the vital organs are dead, no longer any blood circulating. So we would be marviach if one were to assume that the animal is not considered dead until you have either rove or kol of the vital organs no longer have blood circulating. So then we would have a clean, a neat definition of what gosis is. Lemaise, Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as having said that he doesn't think that even if the Vilna Gaon would be alive in our generation, he doesn't think that Vilna Gaon would have broad enough shoulders to make a decision on this issue whether a brain dead patient is considered alive or dead, because there are simply not sufficient sources in the Gemara. But one thing is clear from the Gemara, like the Chasam Sofer pointed out, that breathing is not really the definition of life or death. Breathing is just a similar dover which works in ruba deruba of the cases. And in 24,999 out of 25,000 cases, that will serve as a similar dover. If the fellow is not breathing for 15-20 minutes and the body is cold, then we will assume that he is already dead. But it's not that the breathing is the definition of life and non-breathing is the definition of death. This is a similar dover that something else has occurred in the body. That something else that occurred has to be a concept that was known to the Tanaim. Blood circulation was known to the Tanaim because it appears in Tanakh. Ki adam hu anefesh. That's why the Tanaim say that chavole on Shabbos constitutes a moloche of netilas hashama, malikot l'kula, malikot l'palga. Tosis expression that we quoted before from Ksubis and from Shabbos and the other Mesichtes was a quotation from the Gemara Nida, malikot l'kula, malikot l'palga, exactly on this topic, that if you cause bleeding a little bit, that is considered the mikzas as a form of ntilas neshama. So this was a concept that was known to the Tanoim. You cannot give a definition of death that was simply unknown to the Tanoim. The Tanoim were the ones who were koveya, and we have the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that the breakdown of the history of the world is in three units. You have shnei alofim tohu, shnei alofim Torah, shnei alofim imot haMashiach. So the Chazon Ish has a famous comment in the middle of Hilchos Treifos. He says, what do you mean, Shnei Alofim Torah? There are still people learning Torah b'zman hazeh. The Shnei Alofim Torah ended a long time ago. So he says, he thinks that the pshat is the Shnei Alofim Torah, all of the halachas had to be nikva. The definition of the halachas had to be nikva during that period of time, during the period of Shnei Alofim Torah. That period ended, roughly speaking, about the time that Rabbi Yudan Nasi passed away. The Shnei Alofim Torah. That's the difference between Tanoim and Amoraim. Amoraim have a right to disagree with Tanoim. We have Gemaras every so often where Amoraim disagree with Tanoim. We paskan like the Amoraim. But to establish the Bikoveh, what the categories of halacha are, what the concepts of halacha are, have to be defined. All of these things had to be defined in the period of Shnei Alofim Torah. So you have to be using some definition that was known to the Tanoim. All the fancy definitions of brain death that all the hospitals have come up with today are totally unknown to the Tanaim. The Tanaim knew about the blood circulation. That appears in Tanakh. In fact, it's interesting. A friend of mine is a doctor. He showed me a medical journal years ago where there was a chart with around 50 different opinions quoted regarding brain death. So they quoted that the Royal Academy of Medicine in Hong Kong has one opinion, and the Royal Academy in Paris has a different opinion. The Royal Academy of London has a different opinion. Columbia Presbyterian has a different opinion, and the Harvard Criterion has a different opinion. So they have a chart about 50 different opinions, the other one, and then within each one of the 50 opinions, there are three different variations. So you have at least 150 shitas regarding brain death. So what does the halacha have to say about this? The halacha says there are those who feel that the halacha accepts all of the 150 opinions. This is a little difficult. If the doctors don't accept the other 149 opinions, each one is medaktik, dafka, and hishita. So the rabbanim are going to accept all of the 150 opinions. So the pashtus is that we don't accept any of the above. There are no sources at all in the Talmud that we should recognize brain death. The definition of death has to be based on blood circulation. So there is a possibility to say that if any one of the vital organs no longer has blood circulating in an irreversible fashion, then the person would be considered dead. But if one is prepared to accept brain death, based on that understanding, that one should accept also liver death. If one's liver no longer has blood circulating to it, the person should also be considered dead. I can see such a possibility. But it's unclear. We don't have enough sources in the Talmud. So many years ago, when I wrote my tshuva on this topic, which is published in, it was originally published in the Beis Yitzchak many years ago, and I reprinted it in my Sefer, if anyone is interested in reading all of the sources that I quote, from many Gemaris, many sources in Rishonim, it's in my Sefer, Be'ikvei Hatzon, under the title of Begeder Gavra Ketila. So when I originally was about to publish the essay in the Beis Yitzchak, I sent a copy to Rabbi Gifter Zichron Levracha, who is a member of our Mishpacha, and I asked for his opinion on the matter. So he wrote me, he's an old sick man, he doesn't feel well, he encouraged me to send a copy of my tshuva to Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Moshe had already passed away at that time. He says the only one who can make such a decision is Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He passed away. He encouraged me I should send a copy to Rabbi Yashiv. I sent a copy of my tshuva to an acquaintance of mine in Yerushalayim, and I asked him to contact Rabbi Yashiv to ask for his opinion. Rabbi Yashiv didn't have time to read my 15-page essay, so he asked the acquaintance, bottom line, what did I say? So my acquaintance, my friend, told him that I wrote that I feel that it's a sacred Adina. There are those who feel that a brain-dead patient is not even considered a gose, not even considered a suffix mace, nothing, not even considered a gose. I thought that a brain-dead patient is considered a suffix high suffix mace, until you have all of the vital organs are dead. If you have the rive of the vital organs dead, that's also unclear how many organs have to be dead. And my acquaintance, my friend, told Rabbi Yashiv that my definition of life and death was blood circulation as opposed to no blood circulation. So Rabbi Yashiv said he should convey to me his position, and I should quote it in his name, for those who are interested in knowing what Rabbi Yashiv has to say, that he felt the same, that a brain-dead patient is considered a suffix chai, suffix mace, and he is at least a geuses. He didn't accept those who feel that a brain-dead patient is not inconceivable. He didn't think that it's correct to say he's a vaday meis. He didn't think that it's correct to say that he's a vaday chai. He considered a brain-dead patient as a suffix chai, suffix meis. I remember quite a few years ago when Rav Lezer Shapiro Zichron Levracha, who is a member of the Rabbanut, came to visit the yeshiva for a year. He headed the Yodin Yodin program by us. So he came late. He was expected to come soon after Sukkot, and he came a week or two late. So when he first came to the yeshiva, he went into Dr. Lam's office to say hello. So due to certain circumstances, he schlepped me along with him to come into the office. So he was apologizing to Dr. Lam why he showed up 2 weeks late in his man. He was supposed to be heading the Yodin Yodin program from the beginning of the year, so he said he had to stay for the vote of the Rabbanut regarding the brain death. So what was the vote on the brain death? So he said they had paskin that it's permissible to take organs from a brain dead patient based on a tziruf of different considerations. So he started to flame. Well, first of all, when you take out the organs from the brain dead patient, it's not that there's one doctor taking out the organs. You have several doctors removing the organs. So that's shnayim shahargu. The Gemara said that shnayim shahargu is not chayiv misa. So I remember at that time I couldn't contain myself. I started screaming at this Reb Lezer Shapiro, who is considerably, he was old enough to be my father. I started to scream at him, "Are you crazy?" I screamed at him, "What do you mean? Shtaim Shahagu is Pater from Nisa, but it's not that it's Mutal Lachatchila." I couldn't understand what he's talking about. Then he says, first of all, it's Shtaim Shahagu. Secondly, they only allowed it if a person was in an automobile accident and he became brain dead due to the accident, so they considered that the Geisus B'diyodam. And it goes, it's B'diyod, Mahogwein, and Aragolov. It's not Chayv Misa. So I started to scream again. What are you talking about? A goes, it's B'diyod, Mahogwein, and Aragolov means that you're not Chayv Misa, but it's not that it's Mutalach Atchila to kill him. And secondly, that's identical with your first side. A goes, it's B'diyod, is not Chayv Misa, Mahogwein, and Aragolov, because it's Shnaim Shahagu. It's exactly the same thing. So there are no two Tzodim Lahakal. There isn't even one Tzad Lahakal. Ein and Aragolov just means that there's no Onish B'diyod, but it's certainly an Isser Ritzicha. And then the third tziruf that he said was that maybe the brain-dead patient is really dead. But it's not that it was avadoah that he was considered dead. I personally didn't agree with this position that he told us over in the name of the Rabbanut, based on this tziruf of the three of the Tzvi Tzedotim. And I remember at the time I explained to him I didn't agree either with his assessment of the situation that one who is in an automobile accident should be considered a goyses b'day adam. If I shoot someone on purpose and he's in the throes of death, that's called a goyses b'day adam. But if a person is in an automobile accident, why is that? I crashed into a building. That's called a goyses b'day adam. Goyses b'day adam means shnaim shahogu, hargrein and eragolo. This, I feel, should be the position regarding definition of death, that if any one vital organ is dead, the patient should be considered suffix chai, suffix meis, and we should proceed accordingly. Maybe we'll open the floor for questions at this point. Can you turn the volume up?
Why don't you come?
I'll turn up the volume.
Rep Schachter, my name is Kenneth Prager, and I'm a physician at Columbia Presbyterian. Sit down. Okay, sorry. I'm also the chairman of the Organ Donor Council there, so I'm involved in issues of organ donation. May I ask you several a tripart question? Number one, if we cannot halachically accept the notion of brain death, we effectively cannot accept the notion of heart donation. We consider that, I assume, halachically unacceptable. Since there is murder involved, I assume, in collecting the heart of the patient who was declared brain dead. What would you say to somebody, say, who asked you a shaila, if unfortunately a religious Jew needed a heart transplant, is that religious Jew able to benefit from the murder of somebody else, the halachic murder, in order to have that heart transplanted in that patient? And number two, I wonder how you would deal with the consequence of this, namely that very often we deal with a problem where Jews are viewed as wishing to benefit from the technology of organ donation, are very active in trying to get, if they need it, lung transplantation, heart, but are not willing to be donors as well. This certainly leads to a certain degree of discomfort by Jews. I even have a patient who needs a heart transplant who feels that he may be viewed negatively by the lung transplant program at Columbia because of the fact that Jews are considered takers but not givers.
Rebbe?
Yes. Regarding the first question, if the halacha is not prepared to accept brain death as death, is one permitted to accept a vital organ that was taken from a person where we may have possibly committed murder? So that one could present an argument. It's not that crystal clear that it should be prohibited, but one could argue the point based on sources in Gemara and Rambam that it is not permissible. That even though the doctors are going to kill this patient anyway, they're going to take his vital organs and give them kol hakodim zocher, they're going to give it to somebody, that one could argue the case and say that I'm not allowed to save my life at the expense of the other person's life. Many Rabbanim who have not accepted brain death have, however, said that they feel that that is permissible. Since, ben kovako, the doctors are murdering this person, sofik ritzicha, and the fellow is going to be dead anyway, so many Rabbanim felt that it is permissible to take the organ. Regarding the second issue, it's a major issue. I agree. It is a serious consideration, but we don't permit ritzicha because of social pressure.
Rebbe, does Rebbe have time for any more questions? Do you have any?
Yes.
Do you have time for any more questions? Because any other questions?
Yes.
Oh, I have another 3-4 minutes.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, in that case, I'm going to thank Rabbi Schachter. We'll stop here, and we'll continue later on.
Microphone death.
If I could just.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Brander, for those very important comments to set the conference in context. Just a couple administrative things. Mincha will be taking place in 5 minutes downstairs in room 301, the base medrash. There will be a break till 3:30, at which time we will begin our breakout sessions. There will be four breakout sessions. Please listen carefully for the room numbers. Dr. Rosner will be speaking here in room 501 on end-of-life issues and advanced directives. Dr. Steinberg will be speaking on organ trafficking, the sale of organs in room 301, which is the base medrash downstairs. Dr. Hindi Mermelstein will be speaking in room 305 on psychosocial issues related to organ transplants, and I will be speaking across the hall in room 535 on facial organ transplant and other non-vital organ transplants. Another important comment, there will be, for those of you who will be on the third floor, there actually will be food set up on the third floor as well, so you can feel free to take your nosh on the third floor. For those of you who are on the fifth floor sessions, there'll be refreshments on the fifth floor as well. Enjoy your break, enjoy your sessions.
Testing 1, 2.